Welcome back. You're listening to The Voice of Russia in London. My name is Brendan Cole. Christianity in the United Kingdom has declined sharply over the past decade, according to the census returns, with those who choose to call themselves Christians falling by more than 4 million. It now means that fewer than 6 out of 10, or 59% of people, describe themselves as Christians. This is compared with 72% a decade ago. Those who say they are Muslim have gone up from 1.5 to 2.7 million, the largest other religion by far. The census did throw up some interesting figures. Norwich was the most godless place in the country, with 40% saying they had no religion, while Moseley on Merseyside at 80% the most Christian. There were even some 176,000 people who called themselves Jedi Knights. So now a quarter of the population, or 14.1 million, say they have no religion at all, double the number from the time of the last census 10 years ago. What does this say about the state of faith in the UK? Does it suggest that British society is changing? What does this mean? Well, to discuss this, I'm joined by Linda Rose, who's an Anglican minister and director of the group Voice for Justice UK. Also here in the studio is Fiaz Mughal, founder and director of Faith Matters, and David Pollock, trustee of the British Humanist Association. A warm welcome to you all. Fiaz, what do you think the census said about the state of Britain and the state of faith in Britain?
It's a very interesting picture. In terms of what it's telling us is that there is more diversity, more plurality in terms of communities. It's also telling us that more and more individuals in this country are taking alternative choices, choices sometimes that are not faith-based, but also that there is a growing population that actually see faith as not being potentially relevant to them. And I think that in itself poses a challenge to faith communities. It also poses a number of questions to faith communities that I think need to be addressed over the next few years. It's a picture which is quite diverse, and it's a picture which actually is changing quite rapidly. But actually, I think there are some opportunities and some challenges ahead.
Linda Rose, did the figure surprise you? And what did it say about the Anglican Church in particular, of which you're a minister?
It surprised me because, yes, it's come over as quite a large decline. But I think you've actually put your finger on the reason why this has happened, because we are living in such a very diverse society now with so many different groups coming in. So actually, at one level, I am not disturbed that the number of Christians have ostensibly gone down to 59% of the population, because what I think we're seeing is a loss of cultural Christianity, and there has been a lot of that for a long, long time, which is just kind of nominal. You know, you go into hospital and you put down religion, Anglican, but actually there's nothing there. And I think that hardcore that have actually put themselves down as Christian, they are committed Christians. So actually, I think we're seeing quite a realistic take on the state of faith. But I would agree, too, that a lot of people these days are saying they've got no faith at all. But actually, against that, we're seeing this huge rise in all these alternatives, you know, magic. Suddenly Wicca is figuring. Suddenly tarot cards are figuring. And I think, actually, that for everybody, there's a kind of spiritual awareness. And one of the things that we are seeing in society today is that that is manifesting in other forms. Obviously, there is a lot of work to do for religious and faith communities.
So when people ticked Christian, what does that actually mean, do you think? Can we read too much into this drop from 72% to 59%?
I suspect not. I mean, what it means to be a Christian, you know, the baseline is to be in a living relationship with Christ and to have taken on board the tenets of the Christian faith. So that's a basic. Now, you get lots of, you know, denominational differences within that. But those 59%, by and large, some of them, okay, won't go to church, but a lot of that number, I suspect, will be going and will be actively involved.
David Pollock from the British Humanist Association, does this strengthen the case for greater secularism in society?
Well, of course it does, yes. The number of people who said they had no religion went up from just under 15% to just over 25%, which I think is very significant, especially given that the question that's asked in the census, both last time and this time, is a leading question. It is, what is your religion, with the assumption you've got one? The Office of National Statistics agreed with us that this was a leading question, and indeed in their paper to Parliament they admitted it, and they said that people would answer Christian even if they had merely been baptised or if they'd got married in church. That is, as far as the Office of National Statistics are concerned, it is the merest cultural connection.
What wording did you want?
what we would have preferred was a two-part question, such as the Scottish census had last time, but I'm not sure about this time, which was, do you have a religion? Yes, no. If so, what is it? And that last time, in 2001 in Scotland, got about 28% of people saying they had no religion. Now, I think if you do that in this country, and that is in England and Wales, then you would get comparable scores. Indeed, with respected surveys like British Social Attitudes, you get 50% of people saying they have no religion, they're not religious. So I'm afraid I think Linda's being optimistic when she thinks that her 59% are actually the hardcore of Christians.
So by your reasoning, the position for Christianity in the country is a lot bleaker.
I think the picture for religion, for mainstream religion, is fairly bleak in this country, especially, sadly, for the moderate centrist of ground of religion, the Anglican Church that we all have some sort of affection for, even if we've never believed. If you look at the figures, only about 1 in 10 people, roughly, go to church on any regular basis at all. There is clearly a movement away from it. There's a movement towards some honesty. I think there is that element of it. Some cultural Christians are saying, well, no, we don't have religion. And indeed, that is what the Humanist Association campaigned for in advance of the census. We had a campaign with the slogan, if you're not religious, for God's sake, say so.
You're listening to The Voice of Russia in London. My name's Brendan Cole. We're discussing whether the British census shows the decline of religion. I'm joined by Linda Rose, Anglican minister and director of the group Voice for Justice UK, Fiaz Mughal, founder and director of Faith Matters, and David Pollock, trustee of the British Humanist Association. Fiaz Mughal, I'd like to get your view on the increase in Muslims, 1.5 million to over 2 million now. Did that surprise you? Britain has changed quite a lot in the last 10 years.
It has changed, and I think we are not an island anymore, and the reality is that there are international conflicts and there are refugees and there are people who are seeking places of shelter. And I think we've got to acknowledge the fact that also, you know, since over the last 10 years, since even Bosnia, there have been instances where communities, in this instance, Muslim communities, have sought shelter within our country. And that has led to a rise in numbers, but actually there is also a number of other complex factors at work here. It's not as simple as saying, well, we're getting an influx of Muslims, which actually plays into a far-right narrative, and I think that's deeply problematic in itself. What there is here is also, you've had 9/11, you've had 7/7, and you've had, in many instances, a reinforcement of identity within Muslim communities who are feeling isolated in some cases, and also reinforcing their identity on the back of international catastrophes. And so you're having that playing into this. You're having a sense of dislocation of some of these communities. You're having a rise in the refugee numbers. And that's why I think there are a number of streams which have led to Muslim communities rising. Now, does this mean that more people are turning to faith? In some areas, yes. Again, identity crisis, feeling under pressure, that leads people to kind of turn inwards and also go back to their sense of faith. Over the next 10 years, you know, the same issues affecting Christian communities will affect Muslim communities. There'll be people who may not choose to be of faith anymore. And that will happen over time. You know, there are pressures and there are influences that will affect the Muslim community equally as any other community.
Linda Rose, I mean, if we accept that there is that Christian faith is on the wane in the UK, you dispute that, and I understand that. I mean, it will mean that Christian views and a Christian context on political issues will become less important, such as female bishops, gay marriage, and those kinds of issues, which are very much framed in a religious context.
I think one of the problems today is that there is actually a very aggressive campaign to try and limit the Christian voice in public life. And this is happening in so many different areas. It's happening in politics. And again, the drive is to cut that down. But actually, I think that is going to have a very positive effect because I think it's making Christians stand up and say, well, we have a right to speak out too. We have a right to make our voice heard. So I don't accept your premise that there is a waning that is going to make our voice of less import. I think it's actually defining for Christians what we believe, and they're actually standing up now and saying, you know what, we have a right to speak out, and we have a right to speak our faith, as of course the Muslim community is doing. There is a real drive within society from certain quarters to try and marginalise, isolate and push out. And that, I think, is actually going to work in the wrong way.
But the Anglican point of view, and I specifically mean the Anglican point of view, is still considerably vociferous. And it's not being pushed out of the way, is it? I mean, certainly not in terms of gay marriage, for instance, which David Cameron came out in support of, but except for Anglican churches in England and Wales.
He's having a bit of a problem with gay marriage. I think David Cameron is finding this is maybe a bridge too far. I think the strength of feeling is so much against redefinition because there is no political mandate for it and it's been brought in. And obviously, Christianity, there is a strong argument against it. The Muslim community is also a strong argument against it. It's a slightly different scenario because there is such intense feeling across the board that actually you can't just say, well, the Anglican Church is making its voice heard. Yes, we are, praise God, but so are lots of other groups, because the issue is so intense.
But doesn't it call into question, I mean, the establishment of the Church of England, which claims to speak on behalf of the entire nation in terms of, I mean, politically, for instance, the issue of female bishops, a divisive issue, but bishops still sit in the House of Lords, so there's a political aspect to that, and it's underpinned by the Anglican Church.
I actually am a strong supporter of the establishment of the Anglican Church, because historically, you look at the development of law, you look at the development of statutes, it is strongly based upon and influenced by Christianity. So much of our culture has been born of Christianity. And of course, that is what has underpinned the establishment of the Anglican Church. And if that is dumped at this point, if people say that is irrelevant, we're actually losing something that is of such fundamental and huge foundational importance to our culture. Okay, we have squabbles in the Anglican Church. You're talking to me. I'm a female Anglican priest. I would very happily be a female Anglican bishop if it were on the cards. We have squabbles. But that actually is not something to make us of no weight with a voice in the public arena.
David Pollock, that's a good point, isn't it? Linda talks about the cultural aspects of Anglicanism, and something would be lost if Anglicanism was on the wane, if the Book of Common Prayer wasn't taught in schools, if we didn't learn the King James Bible. I mean, these are important aspects of British cultural life.
Yes, undoubtedly. But then something's always on the wane, and things have to move on and make place for new culture. I'm afraid Christianity is the culture of the past. Now, it's not at all surprising that Linda is pointing to the extent to which Christianity has influenced British history, British culture. I mean, how could it be otherwise? The Christian Church has dominated Europe for the past 1,700 years. It has at times been very dangerous to be anything other than a Christian, or anything other than the right sort of Christian. Because they've been at each other's throats for large parts of that time. But things are now changing. We see that Britain is now, in effect, a post-Christian society, but with the churches still retaining the influence they had in the past. And before Linda gets away with talking about an aggressive campaign to limit Christian voices, let's just point to the ways that their voices are heard beyond any reasonable proportion. They run one in every three schools in the country. They have collective worship and religious education by law in all the schools, 100% of the schools. They have faith advisors in government departments. They have 26 seats in Parliament as of right. They have a quite disproportionate amount of religious broadcasting. They have exemptions from the equality and non-discrimination laws so as to accommodate their freedoms. They're taking on contracts from local authorities to run public services and taking with them into running those public services the exemptions they have to allow them to discriminate on grounds of religion. A lot of this has happened just in the last 10 years, and I think it's partly the change in the census is explained by a popular reaction against the influence of religion and the way that the government has plainly been favouring religion over the last 10 years.
Can I get Linda's response to that?
Well, I would so love to live in this society that David has just painted. This is not my experience. You say that we have one in three schools. We do provide an incredibly good education service, but actually we have to abide by all the regulations that are put in by government. We have capacity to teach faith severely restricted these days. You know as well as I do that the reality is that a lot of schools do not have religious assemblies. They certainly don't have specifically Christian teaching in schools. You say that we have this kind of stranglehold with the charitable work that we're putting up. I'm actually a trustee of Life, which is the biggest pro-life charity in the UK. We have had, we still have, a lot of houses that provide housing for girls who have nowhere else to go when they're pregnant with young children. We have lost a massive amount of government funding because we have been told you can only do this and receive government funding if you conform to the regulations that they put out, regulations like saying you have to provide contraceptive machines in the houses.
Can I bring up the charity aspect to David and which you've raised? I mean, the Anglican Church makes an incredible contribution to society. 8% of adults in the Anglican Church undertake voluntary work for organisations. They fulfil a considerable role in society, and your association doesn't really have a plan to replace that kind of civic sense of duty.
The Christians come out with a higher score of involvement, but if you take away their involvement in their churches as such, then it's level pegging. The non-religious population has a very good record, equivalent, but for that point, to that of the religious in engaging in voluntary work. What distinguishes Christians about it is that they tend to do it under a label of their faith. You have Christian aid, you have Christian charities for this and that, whereas the rest of us just get on with it and join in with the Oxfams and the War on Want.
But wouldn't, if someone was a member of a congregation, wouldn't they be more inclined to make kinds of charitable contributions through acting in their society, in their local community, than if they weren't?
The Anglican Church has a very good record of raising money to pay its own clergy. I find it enviable because I think the average member of the Church of England contributes something like £500 a year. The Church would be in a very bad way if it didn't get that money from them.
Fiaz Mughal, I know your association, your Faith Matters is multi-confessional, but I mean, do you think that something might be lost when Britain becomes a minority Christian nation?
I think certainly faith communities bring a lot into civil society life. Clearly the volunteering angle is one element of it. But I think actually the sense of discipline in worship is something that is positive in communities. And I think certainly if faith communities are becoming more and more, or are seen to become more and more irrelevant, then I think certainly something is lost in society because it provides a focus for individuals. It provides an energy to them. And it certainly gives them the ability to come together as congregations and actually do some, I would use the term, common good for their local areas, but also nationally and also internationally. So I think faith has a significant role to play, and it will continue to play that. I think that's where we're going to be. I think the next 10 years are going to see significant changes, and there will be realistically more people who say that they are not adherents of any faith. But the reality is faith communities are here to stay, and I think they provide many positive, good developments in our country.
Linda Rose, I presume that these census figures were going to be used over the next few years and in terms of they'll be drawn upon whenever we have religious discussions. I mean, what do you think the Anglican Church can take from these figures?
Well, I think we learned that we have to be much more proactive and vibrant in actually going out into the community and teaching the faith again. My experience, the churches I go into are actually, they're bursting at the seams. And I am very encouraged to see so much activity and so much enthusiasm for the faith. I think we need, as a church, to take that on board and do more. Obviously, we're going to have to learn lessons, but we need to be stronger. I think the Christian message and the witness that we're putting out, and that, you know, obviously it involves charitable work, but it's actually building up, I think, the faith communities.
David Pollock, what we have is stronger voices coming from humanists or the atheist community, I suppose. Well, I mean, Richard Dawkins is on television all the time, and there's people like Philip Pullman and Brian Cox, of course, the British particle physicist. I mean, do you see the rise of membership of your organisation due to that kind of exposure?
I think that presumably has some part in it. What we see is that people are reacting against the government's religious pro-religious policies. Faith schools are extremely unpopular in this country. There's 70-80%.
Except for the people who get their children into them, and they're considered to be extremely good schools.
Well, when you look at the figures, and LSE did a very detailed study of this, you find that what you've got here is a virtuous circle, if you like. Any selective school attracts those with sharp elbows who want to get a good education for their children, and the middle classes move in on any school that is in any way selective because they can then get their children there, and that reinforces that.
That's no reason for getting rid of them.
That's not a reason necessarily for getting rid of them. But the reasons for getting rid of them are that it is quite disproportionate to have schools run by churches in such a secular society, that they discriminate. And if you're a teacher, then one in three of the senior posts in education is cut off from you. They are socially divisive because the middle classes make use of them to segregate themselves from the unwashed hordes outside. They tend to be ethnically divisive because religions tend to be ethnically identified. And then they, of course, have this privilege of teaching confessional religion. Now, the Anglican schools don't do that, but the Catholic schools do, the Muslim schools do, the odd Sikh and Hindu school that we've now got do teach confessional religion at the state's expense, which is something that most people are find abhorrent.
Are you concerned about indoctrination?
Yes. And there was a radio program a few years ago now, but Ibrahim Lawson, who's was a head of a Islamia school in Nottingham, said on the radio program, yes, indoctrination is what we do. He embraced the idea of it being indoctrination. Now, I don't think that you would find any Christian headmaster who said that. It's revealing the truth. That's what our present law allows to happen in state-funded schools.
Fias, what's your response to that?
Just take the Muslim schools. I mean, the state's funding for that is absolutely minimal. Okay, a majority of the Muslim schools here are actually the money is raised from the community itself. Yes, there are schools that there may be indoctrination in from a variety of different communities. I mean, the reality of life is that that may happen. But to actually say that there's indoctrination that's taking place on a wide scale is untrue. The fact is that actually faith schools provide a discipline for individuals, which I think is a positive thing, but also faith schools provide the ability for people to think in a wider context. A minority of them may not do that, but actually a majority of them, I believe, are making people responsible enough to live in a pluralistic society where there are diversity of opinions. So actually to say there is indoctrination on a mass scale is just simply untrue, I think. And also, the individuals are exposed to alternatives in faith communities and in faith schools. And that's a positive thing.
Is religion on the wane in the UK? I'm discussing this with Linda Rose, Anglican minister, Fias Mughal, founder and director of Faith Matters, and David Pollock, trustee of the British Humanist Association. It doesn't actually necessarily mean that you're going to blindly follow the faith that's been taught at your school. It just happens to be a good school. And your argument about sharp-elbowed parents is simply they want to get their kids into good schools, not because they're faith schools.
I'm not here to criticise sharp-elbowed parents. I mean, as individuals, we all want to do the best we can for our children. Whether it's a good idea socially, when we put on our hats as citizens, then it's another matter. Fayez talks about faith schools, Muslim schools specifically, providing discipline. Indeed, I mean, it's the discipline of thinking along in a set religious way. It's not the broad education that you would get in a good secular school. You know, he talks about thinking in a wider context. And how can you think in a wider context if you're in a school that's 100% Muslim, with 100% Muslim teachers, teaching the Muslim faith as a given? And segregated from your friends and neighbours in the neighbourhood. I mean, this is what faith schools do. They segregate neighbourhoods.
Do you see it that way, Linda?
No, I see a whole load of problems here. For one thing, I do not accept your initial premise two initial premises, that we are so influential and that we indoctrinate. No, we don't. A lot of people want to send their children to faith schools because they like the moral teaching, the security that it gives them, the stability there. But I just want to pick up on two points here. In one breath, you're saying Christianity is on its way out, you're a spent voice, you're going. And on the next, you're saying, oh, but you have far too much influence in society. Well, I'm sorry, you can't have it both ways. And can I just say one other point? you have just issued a manifesto to remove freedom of speech and freedom of belief. Because what you are saying is, us secularists, we can say what we want, but I'm afraid you faith people over there, just be quiet. You don't have a right to speak out. Well, thank you very much. You are in contravention of the European Convention on Human Rights. You are in contravention of our law in this country. You cannot restrict and marginalise and forbid us to have any expression of our faith.
I do not see for the life of me how on earth you can draw that conclusion. What I was speaking against was the privilege that you have to get your hands on 1 in 3 of the children in this country. No, more like 1 in 4 because the church schools tend to be smaller. 1 in 4 of the children in this country, and give them a more narrow education. Humanists are really strongly in favour of freedom of speech, freedom of belief. Humanists joined with Christians in trying to get the law changed that's just gone through the House of Lords, it hasn't gone through the Commons, the law that was preventing street preaching, the law with the word insult in it, the Public Order Act. We lined up with the Evangelical Alliance to try to get that out. We're in favour of freedom of speech, we're in favour of freedom of belief, but we are not in favour of the state funding the propagation of religion. And I'm afraid the state is funding the propagation of religion through faith schools, through bishops in the Lords, through all the privileges you have, through religious broadcasting. I mean, it's endless.
Fiaz, can I just get your view on that?
There's two things that come to mind. I mean, this whole issue that actually non-faith associations, humanist associations actually stand up for freedom of belief. I think in many instances, this kind of aggression that comes out towards faith communities actually tries to stamp out what faith communities are trying to say in many instances. I think lastly, just to say in this issue, that actually some of the issues around faith schools, particularly here, are completely different to the reality we find. Today, we've got very vibrant faith schools, very inclusive, very open-minded in what they try to undertake in that arena. And I think it's a completely different picture that actually is being presented here by the Humanist Association.
This was the census for 2011. What can we expect from the next census, Linda Rose? Perhaps more Jedi Knights, or what do you think? What's going to be the status of Anglicanism?
I actually know a lot of Christians who signed up said they were Jedi Knights just for fun. So I hope that Jedi Knights are just going to disappear, although I think there's a new Star Wars film coming, so they probably won't. I hope that we see a huge rise in Christianity, but the proper Christianity. I don't want nominal Christianity, so maybe we can go back to 70%.
David Pollack, the number of Jedi Knights suggests that Britons are not losing their sense of humour. I mean, what do you see in the next 10 years?
Thank goodness for that. I see a continuing trend towards people admitting they've got no religion. And we're limping behind a lot of European countries here. In the Czech Republic, 59% say they've got no religion. In the Netherlands, 49%. We're behind all those, but it's the way things are going. We're moving away from the backwardness of places like Malta and Romania and Ireland, indeed.
Fiaz Mughal, Muslims have gone up. Can we see it topping 3 million perhaps this time by the time of the next census?
Who knows, frankly? I mean, the reality is probably will, but we've got to keep a lid on this, and the lid on this is there have been international incidences. We have been seen as a place where people can come and seek refuge, and the reality is that's a positive thing. In many ways, it's a positive thing. You know, I don't want this to be seen as Muslims being a threat to the UK, which a lot of the far-right groups are using, but actually the space of faith will continue, if I can underscore that. And actually, this discussion with non-faith communities needs to happen, but it doesn't have to happen in an aggressive fashion, which I think sometimes it ends up doing, and particularly where both sets of communities actually need to get along with each other in the future.
Well, sadly, we've run out of time, but thank you very much for joining me. That's Fiaz Mughal, founder and director of Faith Matters, Linda Rose, an Anglican minister and director of the group Voice for Justice UK, and David Pollack, trustee of the British Humanist Association. Thank you very much for joining me, Brendan Cole, on The Voice of Russia in London.